From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast, episode 100. We are finally in the triple digits here at the Wildcast and on Tucson.com. As always, I'm Justin Spears here with pretty much the entire sports desk. It actually is the entire sports desk. Caitlin Schmidt, Ryan Finley, Dominic Pachaco, Michael Lev, Bruce Pasco, and columnist Greg Hansen. Hello, everybody.
Shout out to Norma. Norma Gonzalez.
Norma Gonzalez. The newest member of the sports desk. So from August 24th up until today's date is April 17th. A lot has happened. Would you all agree?
It's an understatement.
From Arizona football and everything going on with them, and we have a lot of crime going on in the athletic department, or just it's been an interesting year to say the least. Caitlin Schmidt, you've been on top of the Craig Carter case, the Orlando Bradford case, and then with Arizona football this year, we had Scotty Young Jr., who was a star freshman safety. He was arrested for domestic violence. And you've been a part of the sports desk to cover all of this stuff. Over the last 6 months, what's it been like for you?
I mean, it's been really exciting. It became a full-time position. It was just so busy in the nefarious world of misconduct that I came off COPS and came over to sports and have had plenty to write about. Mm. And the hits kind of just keep on coming, it seems like.
Yeah. Michael, Arizona football, I was listening to Podcast 1 earlier today, and it was talking about open practice notes, what you saw out of the quarterbacks. Khalil Tate was injured at the time, and Brandon Dawkins was quarterback 1 going into the start of the season. Obviously, things have changed. Brandon Dawkins was injured, and Khalil Tate was installed into the lineup, and as they all say, the rest was history. For you, the football season in general, what was it like for you just kind of on that journey?
Well, I mean, it definitely had some peak moments, you know, some major highlights where, you know, Khalil Tate kind of became an overnight sensation. I mean, that's sort of a cliche, but that's really what happened.
Yeah.
You know, that Colorado game, I mean, Greg was there with me, and I mean, I think at one point he turned to me and he just said something like, "Have you ever seen anything like that in your life?" And no one really had, because he rushed for the most yards any quarterback ever has, you know, in an FBS game.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. And then they went on a 4-game winning streak. And if I had told you at the end of October, Greg, that things would turn out the way that they have, you know, that Rich Rod wouldn't be here anymore. I mean, we all thought that. Hey, Khalil Tate just saved Rich Rod's job. He's going to be here for a while. Everything's gone in this one particular direction, and it ended up going in a different direction. When that was going down, that great month of October, what were you thinking?
I wasn't a fan of Rich Rod, and when Khalil had those first two games, I thought selfishly, damn, Rich Rod's coming back. Really, I was full of that for like 6 weeks. Another year with Rich Rod. Mm-hmm. So,
because we started the season, you know, wondering, you know, how long is Rich Rod going to make it through the year? Is he here for the long term? You know, does he need someone to save his job? And then Khalil Tate came along, and it was like, okay, well, I mean, like you said, Rich Rod's here now. I mean, Khalil Tate, that was essentially where he was. He was saving Rich Rod's job.
Mm-hmm. Rich Rod obviously had his flaws, right?
Yes.
In terms of the way he would deal with the media after losses, right, was something that even came up in the press conference with Dave Hickey and President Robbins. They didn't name Rich specifically. They were talking more about Kevin Sumlin and the way he acted after losses and in difficult situations. Recruiting was an issue for Rich. But credit where it's due, he was one of the few coaches who said, you know what, Khalil Tate, you can come and play quarterback for us. Mm-hmm. A lot of schools wanted him to play defensive back or slot receiver or whatever the case might be. And he was right that Khalil was a quarterback. I think where people were frustrated was, why didn't you play him earlier? You know, he even acknowledged that himself. You know, he's like, I know it seems, you know, ridiculous that I didn't start him, but, you know, there were reasons for it. He wasn't a great practice player or whatever. But You know, Rich Rod, he was the coach to bring in Khalil Tate. The last two recruiting classes, I think, were pretty good, kind of the foundation for this team that Kevin Sumlin inherited. But, you know, when you put it in the perspective of how were things in August compared to how they are now, they're kind of totally different than I think anyone could have possibly imagined.
Right. I still want to, and nobody will ever give us a direct answer, but I want to know what the percentage breakdown behind Rich Rod's firing was. How much of it was the notice of claim, the $7.5 million notice of claim, filed January 2nd? I mean, he was fired that night. I'm sorry, it became public January 2nd. He was fired that night. How much of it was that? How much of it was them losing the bowl game and kind of petering out? How much of it was them losing to Arizona State and Rich Rod? Really, I mean, as sort of an embarrassing post-game press conference performance as you'll ever see, I think, from him.
He was highly agitated.
Highly agitated. The way they lost that game, which was Khalil Tate going down with an injury and not coming back and really struggling.
Kudos to Michael, by the way, for being persistent and not backing down there, by the way.
Thanks.
We'd expect nothing less. Yes. But to me, I mean, that's the big question, right? Because the easy storyline is they fired him because he was getting sued. Or because he was going to get sued. The more complicated version, I think, is, yeah, but he was probably fired because he hadn't built up the goodwill or trust among his bosses and among the community to survive the kind of scandal that was headed his way.
Right.
In hindsight, you look at the year they had. Sure, you had Khalil Tate break out, and you had a lot of positives on a young defense. Mm-hmm. But, and Mike Love can attest to this, I'm sure, they finished 7-5. And
7-6
exceeded expectations.
So with how good, exactly, that was exceeding expectations. So if 7-6 is as good of a year as they could have had with how good Khalil Tate was, they faltered down the stretch. They did not have a last good month or month and a half, 2 months.
I don't think they exceeded expectations because the expectations were reset with the four-game winning streak. When you're 6-2, the expectations aren't 7-6 at that point. You know, mm-hmm. we talked about, you know, 8 wins, 9 wins at that point. It seemed like the possibilities were much greater, and they really did falter down the stretch. I have a question for Caitlin now. You remember when Rich Rod's firing was announced, they were very specific in saying, you know, although we could not, you know, corroborate the claims that were made, we found other stuff in the course of, you know, investigating that disturbed us or bothered us about. What did you make of that little out clause that they stuffed in there?
I mean, it probably was just a CYA statement. We've got no documents responsive to his firing, anything about that. But if it wasn't the claims against him, what was it? I think that they had some serious concerns about what happened in the football program with Orlando Bradford and Scotty Young Jr. That statement that he made to the press about if you put your hands on a woman, you're done. That is still haunting the University of Arizona months later, year later. A year and a half later,
yeah.
Because now it's being mentioned in two federal lawsuits the school is named in. So I'm sure they had some serious concerns about what was going on under his watch.
The kicker to all this, in my opinion, is they fire Rich Rod, never make a public comment about him. They had never taken questions about why did they fire him. And they gave him $6.5 million, and it was over.
Well, they would never tell us, I mean, why they had fired him, right?
Yeah. Still to this day.
I mean, we had some communication with the spokesperson over there afterwards that said, no, it was really a constellation of events. I believe the word was constellation. Michael, constellation.
Yeah, I got that from you.
They said it was a variety of things, and it wasn't just because of this. Yeah. And then you come to find out later, well, that really wasn't what they were trying to say. I mean, they wouldn't tell us why they fired him. The only comments we've gotten really about the Rich Rodriguez termination, and it's been since January, was a dual author statement from the president and the AD talking about today is the day we redefine who we are as a university. Today is the day we stand up for our principles, which is a very principled stand to make. But look at all the things that have happened since January. It seemed like sort of selective, selective morality, selective enforcement on that stuff? I mean, given everything that would go on, and I'm sure I'm getting ahead of ourselves, with both Sean Miller and the basketball program in the month of February and March.
Yeah.
I agree. There's still a little bit of a cloud of mystery hanging over the whole thing, but I feel like if you're Dave Hickey and Robert Robbins, you're just sort of like, we're moving on, you know? I don't know if I've said this on the podcast. I know I've said it in conversations. I'm pretty sure I have said it on airwaves somewhere. But the good news for them is that kind of whatever bad stuff happened, mm-hmm. happened before we got here. You know, whatever timelines you want to look at for this incident or that incident or the way that coaches behaved, I didn't hire that person. Those policies were not put in place by me. They sort of have an out in that they have a fresh start.
Clean house, so to speak.
They did. And Rich Rod, I think getting rid of Rich Rod was kind of part of that house cleaning
talk. I think it was an easy decision to make, to be honest. This is a guy who had lost four of his last five games, five of his last six games. You also were due to owe him how much? Was it $3.5 million in a retention bonus on March 15th? I mean, to me, it was a much easier decision to make than, say, the decision they had to make with Sean Miller 6 weeks later.
Which is a great segue, but before we get to that...
Oh, you ruined my segue! Before
we get to that, you say it was an easy decision to make, yet none of us really saw it coming.
No.
Right? I mean, it sort of all happened within, a few hours mm-hmm. on January 2nd?
Well, but that's... You know, I'm going to go to Greg Hansen on this. Greg, me and you had heard... The first real tip we got about this pending lawsuit was the day of the Arizona Bowl, right? So that was December 30th, 29th. Again, by the way,
that week, yeah.
Sneakiest best moment of my year was watching New Mexico State win the Arizona Bowl. Nobody here cares about that.
Sorry, Greg.
But
it was
great. But I mean, Greg, me and you, I mean, I put in a request for comment from the Board of Regents before we left to go to the Arizona Bowl that day. And we knew something was coming. I'm not sure we knew that it would lead to a rather swift, rather decisive termination of Rich Rodriguez 72 hours later.
They needed a new personality, and they've got it. That's the simplest form. The football program has a personality now. There's not an angry old man yelling at people.
But, I mean, they're about the same age. We don't know enough about Kevin Sumlin outside of the fact that we haven't gotten a chance to talk too much to him.
For better or for worse.
But we've seen him operate in practice.
Okay.
And you can He's tell cool. a lot from mm-hmm. how they operate in practice. And Rich Rod, I mean, it was a lot of, not suitable for work
right.
type language, you know? And he was yelling and screaming. And I think it worked with certain players. Like, I talked to a lot of players after the fact, and they said, hey, that's just the way he expressed himself. It was kind of a tough love approach. We knew that he was just trying to make us better. But Kevin Sumlin, hey, he's just standing back there behind with his arms folded, his visor on, his sunglasses. He's like the coolest guy in the room. You know, and if you're talking about an image that the football program wants to portray, I think they'd rather have that than the screaming lunatic who's captured in every single game, yeah. Losing his mind on the sideline.
I don't know, but the vibe that I get from watching them just in open practice is it seems like Kevin Sumlin has a lot more trust in his assistant coaches than Rich Rod did with his.
Bingo. You know, Justin, and I have a regret. We did not talk about that one comment that Khalil made during the post-game scrum the other night when someone asked him to compare Noel Mazzoni, who's the new quarterback's coach, to Rod Smith. And mm-hmm. basically what Khalil said is they're pretty similar if Rod Smith had been allowed yeah. to mm-hmm. coach. Mm-hmm. It was the basic mm-hmm. sentiment. Exactly. I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but there was an implication in what he said that Rich Rod was kind of meddling with the offense.
Meddling.
To a degree.
He made every
Or running
decision.
It. Yeah. however you want to put it. And I do, we heard several times, throughout the course of our interviews with the assistant coaches, no egos on this staff. And this staff includes Kevin Sumlin. Mm-hmm.
So. Ryan, you talked about the whole Rich Rodriguez thing being kind of a bombshell that we didn't expect. Trying the segue thing again, perhaps the thing that we didn't, that tops the list of things we didn't expect last year, Justin.
Yes, Arizona basketball translating into that part of the whirlwind of a year that was in Arizona athletics. I don't even know where to begin because, heading into the season, probably Sean Miller's best recruiting class on paper.
Ever.
Ever. And you mix it in with a returning Alonzo Trier, returning Raleigh Alkins. They were destined for greatness. And then one thing that I remember the most was Lute Olson was on camera, and he said that this is the most talented, most athletic team Arizona has ever put on a court.
And then that's
surprising.
And then the FBI raids Book Richardson's house on September 26th. And later in that same day, Raleigh Alkins breaks his foot.
and that's then, when it starts.
And then a lot, and then we started.
We put on page three because there was so much going on. Because
there's so much going on. Yeah. And then 3 months later, Alonzo Trier tests positive again for the same PED that he had tested positive for last year. And then, what, later that day or the next day, Bruce, Sean Miller is linked to Christian Dawkins and Munish Sood.
How is Bruce not going gray?
I know. From all he's the youngest looking person in the room.
I'm lucky.
Bruce, you're not lucky. I know what you've had to deal with the last 3 months. You're not lucky. What did you make of this season and sort of the continuing saga that is Arizona basketball?
I would say it was a really entertaining team to watch, but not a lot of fun to cover because it was mostly news and not a lot of access to anybody, and they just didn't seem really connected all season, and didn't seem to have that us against the world mentality after the September 26th thing, which I thought when I first thought, you know, this could be a fun season because they have this go on and maybe they're going to rally around it, and then they go to the Bahamas and lose all three games and, you know, got a little better, but not a whole lot. It's just kind of a weird year.
Say what you want about Arizona basketball, whether you like them, whether you hate them. The one thing you have to kind of give them credit for up until the Buffalo loss is how well they played through it all. I mean, you didn't really see, because we were wondering the entire year, is this going to affect them on the court? And sure, maybe the Bahamas, maybe it played into the Bahama trip a little bit, but I don't think so because of how they bounced back. I mean, they came back and beat A&M. They beat a tough Alabama team. And you didn't really see it affect them until, I guess you could say, Buffalo. But, I mean, they won a lot of games. They were competitive.
But who did they play?
Right,
I mean, to me, that's a larger issue, too. I mean, they did a really good job being Long Beach State and some others.
And some
UMBC. UMBC.
UMBC, come on, man.
And as we found out later, the Pac-12 wasn't really that good after all anyway. So,
right.
You know, that puts an asterisk on what they accomplished there.
And that is, I mean, that, again, I think that all came, it all unraveled in the Buffalo game because for however well they played throughout the year, no matter who they were playing, whether it was Pac-12 teams or UMBC, a good Texas A&M team, they blew it ever since the tournament against Buffalo.
Yeah, I just think it just seems, maybe it's extremely untechnical to say this, but I just think that the bottom line is they didn't want it that much, and I think there's some guys that were just as happy that it was over, and you know, they wanted to win, but, you know, not deep down as much as Buffalo did. And, you know, and I thought that was true. And Justin saw this, too, after the game in the locker room where they're, you know, this, certainly the seniors, Parker, Cartwright, and Dusan Ristich are very upset. And even Keanu Pender as well, you know, and you feel bad for those guys. But there are other guys that were checking their phones or lying on the floor. And, you know, just didn't, you know, I've gone into locker rooms after first round losses and guys have towels over their heads, they're crying, they don't want to talk to anybody, and they're clearly upset. This was not the case here.
You say they didn't want it. Is it fair to say they were ready for the season to be over? I mean, after everything they had been through, Miller wasn't their coach a couple weeks before. Were they just over it?
Well, and Bruce, going back to your point when you said you remember seeing players crying, I remember talking to Alonzo Trier after they lost in the Pac-12 tournament his freshman year, and he was crying then. After this loss, he was completely checked out. And I don't mean to single just him out because it was a lot of players. But it was just interesting to me. But for Greg, when you saw the investigation of college basketball and the pay-for-play scheme, you've seen a lot of college basketball. Is this, when you saw that investigation unravel, did you think to yourself, like, okay, this is it for college basketball?
I thought, and still think, that the biggest news is still to come on the entire college basketball scope. But the jury's not only out, it hasn't been assembled yet.
Yeah.
So how long is it going to take?
Yeah.
To me, that's the issue here is how much longer will Arizona be paralyzed?
Right. They're held hostage by all this as a result, not that they're, you know, for whatever reason, getting there, their recruiting is really a hostage situation right now. They can't recruit at the same level anymore. You know, people aren't sure what's going to happen here, when in fact it's possible that there's dozens of other programs that are going to run into the same problem. We saw, you know, just a week or so ago where you had a couple other schools, Kansas, thrown in there as well. And, you know, so there's really a lot to be you know, a lot to be decided. It's just a matter of Arizona was in that first wave, so they've got that against them, and it's really hurting them.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, but my outside perception as a sort of a basketball outsider is that they're operating as if none of this is hanging over them, aren't they? I mean, Sean Miller's still out recruiting, right? He still has a job. He just hired an assistant coach. They're still trying to assemble a team. They stuck with Sean Miller. The administration did. Does it surprise you that that's sort of been the short-term outcome of this thing?
Well, not surprising the way Miller is. He's a very private, guarded individual, and so he's publicly made it clear, I'm just coaching this team. I'm going to do my job. I'm out recruiting, whatever. He said, you know, and so he's not acknowledging, but, you know, the evidence is all around him, and then there's no, you can't deny it. And in fact, we saw in Buffalo that, you know, and in the Pac-12 tournament too, where between games they're getting asked constantly, what about this, what about the ESPN report, whatever. And you knew, even if they had beaten Buffalo and kept going, the more they would keep going, the more questions everyone would be talking about this stuff. So, there was that. So I think, well, a chance, maybe a little bit less, only in that it's a year removed, and now you've got some other programs kind of pulled into this as well, and maybe more will come out over the next, who knows, next few months or whatever. But it's still going to be there, and I think, you know, again, the damage is in recruiting, really. They're not recruiting at the same level. They can't. They lost, you know, they were online to pull in. Dom talked about the class they had this year or whatever, or Justin, but the class they might have had for 2018 could have been the best of all time, because not only the three guys who decommitted, but they were in with 2, 3, 4 other 5 stars. They probably would have gotten at least 1 or 2 of those guys, and then maybe pull out something this spring. And they've got none of that, and and they've got a couple of guys they pulled in who might have some upside, but aren't, you know, at least as of right now, regarded as those kind of players.
I mean, we sat here. I can't even remember. I mean, before the Final Four was in Phoenix over a year ago now, and Arizona had their easiest route to the Final Four. I don't want to say easiest. Xavier was a good team, but they had what we thought was their best chance at making a Final Four and winning a national championship under Sean Miller. And then we're sitting here a little over a year later.
Hold my beer.
Yeah. a little over a year later, you know, wondering when this cloud is going to be lifted over Arizona. And like Bruce and Greg said, it's not anytime soon. I mean, the NCAA can't even get in here and start handing out sanctions or recruiting penalties or whatever they are until the FBI finishes, which is no end in sight.
Well, we can argue, too, about whether or not sticking with Sean Miller is the right thing to do. I think that if we're talking about what is correct, maybe the U of A has made the right decision to stick with him, at least short term. But a flip side of doing that is you are really held hostage by this process until it concludes. Mm-hmm. If the U of A doesn't feel like it had enough to fire Sean Miller for cause, then they're going to have to wait until Sean Miller is either, until we know more, I guess, is the best way to phrase it. And, you know, again, that might take years. One of the questions for you, Bruce and Greg, that I think might get overlooked a little bit in the mess that we've dealt with here the last 6 months or so, is the fact that arguably the best college player to ever come through the U of A, DeAndre Ayton, shows up, flashed bright and hot for a while, will be the number one pick in this year's draft. And yet, because of everything that was going on, I still feel like was almost underrated. What is your lasting impression of him this year, Greg, and then Bruce?
By the end of the year, I thought he was easily the most talented player Arizona's ever had, mm-hmm. and they didn't get enough out of him.
We looked at him against USC in that Pac-12 championship game in Las Vegas. I thought that was as good a performance as you'd see from a college player in a long time. And with him, it looked like the sky was the limit. And then he went out and played so poorly against Buffalo, and they lost. Is that just an experience, or was that good game planning? What do you think, Bruce?
Well, he didn't get the ball that much. Buffalo did play pretty good defense against him, and also against the guards trying to get him the ball. I mean, I don't know exactly why. I mean, he had a couple of off games like that throughout the course of the year, but for the most part, he was incredible. I mean, you know, like Greg said, I don't think I've covered a player better than that, and I've been covering Hoops for on and off for the better part of 20 years. I mean, he was incredible. But to your original point, Ryan, I think He didn't get a, maybe he did get first team consensus All-American, which is obviously extremely impressive, but I still think there's maybe not enough exposure just because of Pac-12 network and late starts. I mean, those two last games he had in the Pac-12 tournaments were totally dominant. I mean, I think they, one was on Pac-12 networks and the next one was on FS1 at 11 o'clock Eastern or something. I mean, who's watching?
Yeah.
So, you know.
I have a question for Greg. Taking the FBI element out of this whole thing, do you feel like Sean Miller has done a good job as Arizona coach, just basketball-wise?
This year?
Great. No, over the course of his career.
Oh, yeah.
Good job, great job, spectacular. What would you say?
As good as they could have ever hoped for.
Okay. Do you feel like fans the
program,
feel the same way?
Rebuilt the program. He didn't add a personality to it. But his shortcomings are coming into view now.
Right.
What I remember after the loss to Buffalo, mm-hmm. Nate Oakes, the coach of Buffalo, no one had ever heard of him, he got up on a podium. It was late at night, and somebody said, "How did you stop DeAndre Ayton?" And he goes, "It was easy. We put a guy behind him and a guy in front of him." And it was like, what a shot at Sean Miller. Sean Miller didn't adjust to any of that stuff. And I think, to me, in the community now, people who follow basketball wonder if Sean Miller is really a good coach other than a recruiter.
Yeah.
Which is funny because I think that goes a little bit against what his MO was when he got here and what his reputation was after the first couple of years was, I thought, and maybe I'm wrong, Bruce, but I thought X's and O's wise, he was a vast improvement over who Arizona had, even in the latter years of Lute Olson. He was doing kind of the Ben Hallen timeout stuff and going with the short bench and playing physically and teaching young men to play defense, which I think is very hard. But at some point, he started getting five-star players and maybe not getting as much out of them as you would think. I mean, this is a guy who in consecutive years will have had Aaron Gordon, Stanley Johnson, Lowry, Markkanen, and DeAndre Ayton come through, and Arizona has nothing better than what?
I mean, this is probably simplistic, but I've talked to NBA scouts who say, well, why don't they let them play more at Arizona? What's going on there? But I don't know what, you know, regardless of whether or not that's true, we're going to find out next year, because next year he's going to have an entire roster of 3 and 4 star players instead of 4 and 5s, and maybe even some 2 star players.
Is that
so
better?
We'll see how, and maybe he does better with that group. Maybe they buy in and that system works better. I don't know, but we'll find out.
Justin and I have talked about this where people go after Sean Miller. The Sean Miller haters, let's put that in air quotes, come after him and go, look at what Villanova's doing. They don't hire foot. They don't go out and recruit 5 star players who are 1 and dones. They go after 3 and 4 star guys. Okay, so you want Sean Miller to go after worse players every year? Like, what do you want him to do?
Yeah.
Like, he's going after the best players who give him the best chance to win. He's not going to go after guys who are going to stay longer because they're worse.
Well, that's obviously a counterintuitive argument, but I wonder if his style just works better with those types of players.
TJ McConnell, Mark Lyons, going to the NBA immediately.
It works better with older players. That's why he's able to bring in TJ McConnell, who had a couple years of college experience, came in, and with Sean Miller's tough coaching style, was able to thrive.
Right. Well, he had that extra year to learn the system, too, as a redshirt sitting out, which is very important, too.
But I think that you're also kind of diminishing Villanova when you make that argument. Jalen Brunson, the AP player of the year this year, was not just some dude who built himself into a hell of a player. Remember, they had to hire his father to the staff to get him to go to Villanova, and his father got caught in a compromising sit with his pants down, shall we say, and ended up not being their assistant coach, correct? Or was that...
I don't remember all the details on that.
I mean, Brunson was a household name as a recruit.
Well, and Javon Quinnerly's going there as well, and he may not be one and done, but he probably thinks he's one and done. Yeah.
Well,
so, yeah, no.
I mean, these are the same people who call me who say they need more players like Steve Kerr, who had 2 offers out of high school, one from Cal State Fullerton and one from Arizona. If they got guys like that, one from Cal State Fullerton and one from Arizona, if they were recruiting players like that, they'd go 6-23 and everybody'd get fired.
Well, part of it is luck. I mean, you get like UNC a year ago where you get those really good players who just aren't quite good enough to make sure they're going to go in the first round. They come back and they win a title, whatever. And that's why people were so fired up about Arizona before last season, was that they had Trier and Raleigh Alkins, who appeared to be in that category, coming back, but it didn't, plus all the new guys. And that was usually a mix that would work, but just, you know, again, that team wasn't connected and Alkins got hurt, et cetera, et cetera.
But despite all the, I guess, negative headlines surrounding Arizona basketball, and you think about the national publicity that Arizona gets as a program, it all boils down to one person, mm-hmm. and that is none other than Lute Olson. Olson got a statue outside of McHale Center just last week. I thought it was a pretty uplifting event, would you say, Bruce? Considering, I mean, I understand that he didn't have all of his top players back because some are finishing playing slash coaching seasons with the NBA. But what did you make out of the event, and what did you think about the whole night?
Well, I think, you know, it's hard to do that. I think maybe you could argue they could have done a little more with it. I think, as Greg pointed out, maybe you'd have a video thing or something, a little more show or whatever. But, you know, considering it had to be outside where the statue was, and it was a hot and sunny or hot and windy day, kind of awkward, and there was spring fling going on or getting set up, so there's fences everywhere. You couldn't put in fans too easily, although I thought they maybe it could have opened it up to fans and make it a little more festive. But that was the only thing really was lacking. It was more of like a, it felt like a booster function, you know, just like a fancier version of a booster luncheon or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think not allowing fans, having it be a closed event, was kind of cheap in the sense that, who are you doing this for? I mean, yeah, you're honoring Lute Olson, but aren't the fans what make it all worthwhile? I mean, you're gonna unveil a statue to a guy who Tucson looks up to as a god, and you're gonna say, no one can come. Only the people we invite can come.
Yeah. Only the people who donated money to get the statue built can come.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know.
It was just it's a weird thing because the timing was weird to me. It's been gone 10 years now. You know, somebody said to me, well, they should have done this 10 years ago. But if you think 10 years ago, there was a lot of weirdness going on about the transition, and not a lot of people felt good about anything at that point. So that wasn't a good time either. And then, you know, and then if you did it 2 or 3 years after that, you got Sean Miller just trying to get things going, and it's kind of overshadowing that. So when is a good time? And you know, it's difficult all the way around.
Yeah. Greg, what did you – I know that you had written a little bit about what you thought of the event itself. Do you think that – was this overdue? Was it weird the way they did it? Just general thoughts on that.
I thought it was overdue when, at a game at Cal about 3 years ago, I'd really never walked around Haas Pavilion down in the bottom part, and I walked in and there's a big statue there of Pete Newell, who coached Cal to the 1960 National Championship. Mm-hmm. Pete Newell. Mm-hmm. He coached at Cal for 4 years.
Right.
They got a big statue. It's on a pedestal. That's when it hit me that, geez, Lute Olson accomplished 5 times more than Pete Newell, and they don't have a statue. Mm-hmm. And Cal drew 2,700 fans.
Right.
Arizona, you know, sells 14,000 every game.
Right.
Is, I think it, Oski has a statue, too, doesn't he, or something? Yeah, or some, maybe it's an inflatable Oski.
Hands in the sweater. I love Oski.
Mascot.
And that's, I think, my thing, Greg, is when you talk about it being a little bit of an underwhelming situation, I look, my mind sort of races, and I go, well, yeah, but had they done it during homecoming weekend last fall, that might have been awesome. Had they done it last summer, last August or July, before Steve Kerr had to go to training camp, that might have been awesome.
Didn't Lute also have like a big birthday a couple years ago?
Yeah, when he turned 80.
And he had all of his former players come down.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, that's
glad that, I came for that.
Yeah, that's the frustrating part to me is it was held at a time of year when all of the people you want to see, Sean Elliott, Steve Kerr, among them, could not possibly be there, and it was held on, you know, what crappy luck. A day in April that was not only super hot but super windy. You guys knew the visuals were terrible. The audio was terrible. It was just sort of a bad look.
Thursday afternoon at 4:30. Are you kidding me?
Was there at least a bar?
No.
There
might have been. Okay.
Well, at least there was
that
a
table
bar.
Over there.
At least there was a bar.
That's all. Anyways, so this was a pretty eventful podcast, I would say.
Not as eventful for the year.
We covered a lot, and looking ahead, of course, we still have the Craig Carter civil case, correct?
Yes, that is still going.
And still going.
The criminal case is still going, in fact. Yes. He has a motion for a new trial he's filed. There will be a hearing in a few weeks. In the meantime, the state is still paying for his defense in this lawsuit. Which we don't even know how much longer that will drag out. I'm sure all parties are eager for it to be done, but you sure wouldn't know it from how long it's taking. So,
and then on top of that, you're still dealing with the Josh Pastner case, too.
Oh, yes.
That's a different podcast. We're going to talk about that for another 20 minutes.
No, so Ron Bell.
That's a lot.
And Book Richardson's a year from now, right?
Yeah.
What's the chance that changes or gets moved up or settled or something?
Possible? You know, if I were facing those kinds of charges, I would sure try my best to cut a deal. I don't think that we will see that case go before a jury. I think we'll see some deals cut, but it could be a ways down the road. We still are having sealed documents filed. We had one last week. That protective order being tightened seems to have worked. I don't know that we'll get a whole lot of additional leaks from it, but gosh, hopefully by fall. Who knows?
Yeah.
Bringing this back to Rich Rod, whom we talked about at the beginning of the podcast. So there was a notice of claim filed against the school and then him, right? And then his attorneys filed that extensive, elaborate response to everything. So was there ever an actual lawsuit?
No, the lawsuit has not been filed.
And is there a deadline?
After they file the claim, they have to wait 60 days to give the school an opportunity to settle before they can file in Superior Court. That 60 days was up like February 26th and then March 2nd because of the two claims. I reached out to the attorney representing Melissa Wilhelmson twice now and have not heard back yet. But I have been checking Superior Court. Nothing's been filed. So,
what do you think is going to be the ultimate outcome?
It's really tough to say. To go through the effort to file a claim like that and to bring that to public. I mean, things can have been easy for Melissa Wilhelmson since doing that. So to not file a lawsuit in response, I would be surprised. It's kind of like once you put all that out there and put yourself in the spotlight that way, you need to take it all the way.
Does there need to be a lawsuit in order for there to be a settlement?
But the school hasn't paid out. So they haven't made a payment. And it's important to remember that all of these lawsuits that are either in federal or superior court all started as claims. The U of A doesn't pay claims. They don't settle claims. It sets a dangerous precedent. So, you know, there could have, that was the option there, but I don't know what's going on with that. But I don't think he's out of the woods yet because now he's a party in that federal lawsuit involving Bradford. So he's, it's going to be a rough road for him.
It's going to be a rough road for you too.
Yes,
with all that everything that you got going on.
Yes, it will. Those federal trials have both of them are going to jury trials. So I might be spending some weeks up in Phoenix here in the fall.
One of the hardest working journalists in the game.
Before we get going here, and I know we've been going for a while, so we'll make this short, but I want to go around the room. By the time we do episode 200, that'll be in, let's say that's October or November, what will be the big headline that day? Greg Hansen?
Ooh, good question.
I think it will be that Arizona will be in serious contention to win the Pac-12 South.
In football.
And that Khalil Tate will be on the national stage.
Bruce Bassett?
I was thinking Tate for Heisman. He's going to be one of the top two or three, I think, at the moment.
Michael Lev?
Stealing my thunder. Wow. Okay. Yeah, I do feel like the Pac-12 South is pretty wide open, more so than a lot of people realize. I mean, USC has to replace Sam Darnold, Ronald Jones, among others. There's a lot of uncertainty at quarterback for the perennial favorites in that division. I think people are pretty bullish on the prospects for Arizona football right now, and it would not surprise me if come, you know, the time when they're about to release the college football playoff that they're at least going to be in that top 25 consideration. I don't think we're talking about a team that can actually make the playoff because that's a lot to ask, but if you're talking about 9 wins, maybe 10, I think it's within the realm of possibilities.
Yeah. Dominic Pacheco, go.
Can I throw some hot takes out here?
Sure.
Yeah. I think Arizona basketball will have, I said hot takes, so I'll push the envelope. I think they'll have a top 20 recruiting class.
Whoa.
I do not.
It's Brandon Williams.
Brandon Williams. Yeah.
If you count by volume, that might be.
In saying that, Sean Miller's going to have to coach, and I think you're going to see some holes there, so they might lose some games early. From a football standpoint, Khalil Tate for Heisman, I think he'll be in the race. But
if he stays healthy,
right? If he stays healthy, that's he cannot be for football.
So. I'll say 6 months from now, the most exciting team on campus at Arizona will be the women's basketball team.
Wow!
They have their first ever McDonald's All-American, Kate Reese. She's going to enroll here in the summer. A handful of other five-star players. I believe before this year they had one five-star player in their history. That was Shantanese Polk a million years ago. This class alone has three of them. I think that Adia Barnes, who is about as media-friendly and about as marketable as any coach Arizona's ever had, will be a hot name, and that Kate Reese will be a hot player here next November or December. Okay. Caitlin Schmidt? Give me something legal.
Something legal. I think that we will see a sizable payout in the Craig Carter civil trial by October, would be my guess. I think that'll be wrapped up. We've already looking at $1 million in legal fees to his attorneys.
Paid for by who? Wow.
Paid for by the state. That number will, of course, get higher, but I think we'll be seeing a fairly high settlement to Bailey Gibson in that case.
Justin.
Okay. I can't go basketball and I can't go football.
Roadrunners.
There we go.
The Calder Cup champions.
The Tucson Roadrunners will be the Calder Cup champions.
Nice. There we go.
Yes.
So they'll be having a ring ceremony or whatever they do. Yeah. Like a cup or whatever.
Do they throw a parade? Do they throw a parade for Dylan Sturm and the Roadrunners?
In downtown Tucson.
They better.
Yes.
They better. If they win it all, they better throw a parade.
Yes.
That would be pretty big.
Do they kiss the cup and all that too? Or?
They drank out of it. They do the whole thing. Greg just put that idea in my head just now.
Greg Hansen, if they win it all and you get the opportunity to, would you drink an adult beverage out of the Calder Cup?
I'd tell you that would be something to stay around for.
Stella Artois, right?
He's a Stella guy.
Now, another thing I was going to say is I think Haley Moore will establish herself as the best women's golfer in Arizona history next year.
You know, Annika,
it's tough. I do know.
She'll come back for a senior year.
I think she will.
Did you say female? Best female golfer?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, no, I'm just because there's a lot of good male golfers who have come out of here.
Yes. Jim Furyk. That's a hard name to call.
Jim Furyk, yeah. Ricky Barnes.
But,
Jim Mavich.
Yeah, Haley Moore, she won best junior women's athlete in the Catsies yesterday. Mm-hmm. I think she'll come back, finish off her senior year, establish herself as the best to ever do it.
Greg, if you were given the opportunity to drink an adult beverage out of a catsy, would you do that?
Is that even a cup?
I drink it out of this cup.
All right. Well, 100 episodes in. Here's to another 100 more. And thank you all. Thank you, Greg Hansen. Thank you, Bruce Pasco, Mike Lev, Dominic Pachaco, Ryan Finley, Caitlin Schmidt. Thank you for all joining the roundtable and talking about everything that happened in Arizona Athletics and everything looking forward.
Thank you, listeners.
Thank you, listeners. Don't forget to download the free Wildcast podcast, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, and like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Thanks for listening.